This is the MLWRadio.com network.
July 18, one day after a national holiday in Japan by the name of Umi no Hi. That's the Marine, or also known as Ocean and Sea Day. And we, the Eastern Lariat crew, we are back. This is the Eastern Lariat, your show for news notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling on the MLW Radio Network. I am your host, Striga. I am with my man, Dylan Harris from Tennessee. Dylan, how are things one day after the opening day of the G1 Climax?
My God, Striga, what a beautiful night it is to be recording this show. I'm so excited. I'm so excited, not just the G1. You got BJW on there, and I was so proud when I messaged you last night, because I thought for sure you'd be watching G1 and you'd leave Big Japan out in the cold, but you didn't. No. You were there with me live, and we both watched it. We both followed it along. We both had all sorts of tweets with all sorts of strange, but mostly cool people. And then we watched the G1 later. And what a night it was for wrestling as a whole, particularly in Japan. This is one of the best nights of the year, in my opinion, so I really can't wait to get into this stream.
It's always an awesome night for wrestling. As I just mentioned, it was a public holiday, and basically every big company and all the small companies run shows on that day. And I'm just looking at the Weekly Pro website right now, and they list 14 shows for yesterday, including, of course, All Japan, Big Japan, New Japan, but also smaller companies like Ryukyu Dragon Pro Wrestling. They ran a show, and to be quite honest, I am very certain that there were lots of more shows on this day than Weekly Pro has listed on their website. So it's always a great day for pro wrestling, and since the last couple of years, both New Japan and Big Japan run their big show. For New Japan, it's the opening day of the G1 Climax, and for Big Japan, it's the yearly Sumo Hall show they run since 2015, I think. And you and I watched both shows yesterday, which was a total amount
at the same time.
No, I didn't. I watched Big Japan live and New Japan later, but I read that some people, namely Trask from Wrestling with Words, he watched both shows simultaneously and even did a review simultaneously while watching both shows. So that's another level of crazy. I thought watching 8 hours of wrestling on one day was crazy enough, but then writing about it while watching it, that's dedication.
Listen, if that's what you call multitasking right there, Striga. I got to give props to Trask on there. So good job there. We did not do that. we watched them back-to-back. You took a nap after Big Japan, and I took it after watching G1 right after. So we were both napping in there as well. Very similar schedules. But it was a great time all around. A time well spent by both of us, in my opinion. It was just a really great night overall. I can't wait to get into this.
Yeah, so let's start with the obvious one, with the 27th G1 Climax by New Japan Pro Wrestling from the Hokkaido Prefectural Sports Center, Kitayel, drawing 6,189 fans. More than last year for the opening day there. They always start the G1 Climax in Hokkaido, and then run usually a triple shot of Tokyo Kurken Hall. And first thing I took away from this show, Dylan, was that the undercard was a lot of fun. We had in the opening match Kojima, Tenzan, and Liger defeating Elgin, Juice Robinson, and David Finlay. And from the get-go, the crowd was so into this six-man tag and was so fun to watch. And Juice and Kojima really teared it up yesterday. And this entire crowd noise was usually kept up throughout the show with some minor exceptions, but overall, I thought it was a great crowd, and I thought it was a great show.
Oh, yeah. This show, as a whole, I kind of breezed through the undercard. I paid more attention to the Ingram and Ablaze match more than anything, but I mostly breezed through these undercard matches. I saw Kenny Omega and Suzuki brawling into the back, you know, and things of that nature, but I was more focused on the tournament matches, as I will be. I know you're more into these undercard matches than me, but the opener match, I did catch the end of it, and like you said, these guys all work pretty good together, and we saw some nice teases of future matches going forward in the tournament with the Kojima against both Juice and Elgin in the future as well.
Right, Kojima and Juice, they teased their match for the next G1 show, that's on Thursday. Also, Kenny Omega and Minoru Suzuki headlining this Thursday show, they teased their matches. And you mentioned already the Los Ingobernables match between Evil and Takahashi on one side and Sanada and Bushi on the other side. And what a great performance by Evil in those 7 minutes. The interactions he had with both his opponents were fantastic. And in the end, he, I think, Voice of Wrestling tweeted that he violently choked out poor Bushi. And Bushi sold it so well after the match, and it took the four a while to get into the middle of the ring to do the Los Ingobernables fist bump. But I thought great prelude for Evil versus Sanada.
I know, and a lot of people think this is a new move for Evil that he used here, but he's actually done it before. Right. I've seen it before as well.
Yeah. I saw on the Best of the Super Juniors tour already.
And what's it called?
It's the Banshee Muzzle.
The Banshee Muzzle.
The Banshee Muzzle, it's called. And I believe it's kind of a mystical figure. I'm not quite sure. Banshee is an Irish... what's it?
Like a demon.
Something like a demon, right?
Yeah, right.
Demon, and if I also look up muzzle, I can look that up. Muzzle.
That goes on a dog.
Excuse me?
So it's kind of like, that goes on a dog. Dogs wear muzzle.
Oh, yeah, right.
To, like, not stop them from biting people.
That's correct. And so, yeah, that goes with the character of Evil, so fits right in there. But,
you know, I just want to point out, because we didn't really do a show, you did in German. going over your bracket for the tournament, but I really think that if there was a dark horse pick out of the usual guys at Barkby, a lot of people I know like Sanada and think he's awesome, and he's good, don't get me wrong, but I think Evil is the best heavyweight, and I think, again, like you mentioned, he did a great job in this match particularly. Yeah. I think he is going to be someone, not necessarily, maybe not points, I think Evil and Sanada are both going to wind up about the same. In my pickups, I had them both at 10, and I think Evil, but in terms of pure match quality, Evil could be a dark horse MVP candidate by the end of this. I really have high hopes for him in the ring, and I think that this match is going to be really good and really telling from where they go. And when we previewed this whole tournament, I pointed out that I think Evil and Sanada are competing against each other in a strange way to become the next in line of the Ingobernables. And I think this tournament is going to go a long way to see who outperforms who. And right now, I really enjoy Evil, and despite a gimmick that I think is utterly stupid, for the most part, I think as a worker, though, he overcomes all that, and he's someone I always enjoy watching, and I can't wait for their match, Evils and Sonatas. I think a lot of people are going to be really anticipating that going forward.
Yeah, I think I was kind of ahead of the curve last year when I picked Sanada to have a great G1 climax. Now, basically, everybody is predicting him to have a great tournament. Some are predicting him to make it to the finals. I'm not so sure about that because I have another scenario in my head, but I was going to ask you about your picks, but let's look at those matches that we had yesterday. And
right.
You know, it started off with a fantastic match between two guys that you especially like, because I'm just leaving the floor to you.
Oh, this was a freaking incredible match. I thought this was the perfect opener to the tournament. We're talking about, of course, Blue Justice, Yuji Nagata, versus the Loose One himself, Yoshihashi. And I thought they did some really cool work here. Nagata, you know, he used his offense against Yoshihashi early on, targeting the arm. And Yoshihashi, as usual, he couldn't really get the advantage when it comes to striking, but it was more his emotion that he showed in the match where he stood out here. They started off with Hashi almost, he really played his role really well here, and this isn't a role he's really known for, but he showed no respect to Nagata early on, started to slap him around a little bit, and, you know, Nagata, when he fires up, he just rocked it here. They told a great story. Yoshihashi used some of his moves to great effect, and when there was a really spot I loved in this match where Nagata locked in his eye roll back armbar,
yeah,
and Hashi had a great fighting spirit moment where he fought to the ropes, and I thought that was good because that's a move that I don't understand why they don't let him win matches with this armbar. I think it would get really super over if, and it's already really over, but I think it would be even better if they let him win sometimes with it. But here Hashi made this look like this was serious trouble, you know.
Yeah. Sold it so well, on the other side, Nagata was trapped in Yoshihashi's butterfly lock a little bit later in the match, and he also sold that so well and made it look so dangerous. To basically, while Yoshihashi didn't win with the move, it was established as to be a dangerous move with which he could win matches in the G1 climax.
Yeah, I really love that move too. He's used that last year. He continues using it. I thought there was a great moment too where Nagata looked for the Saito suplex, but Hashi countered it into a guillotine choke, which went into a cradle. I thought that was a great near fall opportunity. And in the end, Nagata fought as good as he could to take out the Karma, but Yoshi hit the backstabber and then hit the Karma for the win. I was kind of sad seeing Nagata lose already. Any sort of dreams I had for a big run were already already on life support pretty much with this loss. But, you know, I don't mind being wrong with Nagata here because Yoshihashi gets the win. And that's always good. Yoshihashi getting the win early on. And overall, I just think this was a great match, so I really had no complaints at all. I thought this was a very strong match to open up the tournament.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my pickems here, and I just saw that I have Yuji Nagata with 8 points in the end, and that's really the problem if you pick every single night, and in the end you look at your standings and there is a guy up there that you usually wouldn't have so far up in the rankings. I don't think that Nagata is going to be able to make it to 8 points. It's one of those stories that they told here again, that kind of the same that they did with Yushin Liger, where Nagata is still able to compete, but in the end, the younger guy, he gets the win, and that was kind of the case here too, even though Yuji Nagata hit a fantastic Saito suplex in this match too.
Yeah, that set up the counter that Hashi did for the
Right. So, yeah, Nagata with one down already, but he already went to Tokyo Sports and said that he's going to win the second, third, and fourth match now. And, let's see. And, what followed was one of the very few flaws in a pacing of a G1 Climax show, or even a New Japan show as a whole. Because after this nearly 17-minute great match between Yoshihashi and Yuji Nagata, we saw something completely different, but the problem with that was that Yoshihashi and Nagata, they set up the bar so high that it was almost impossible for Bad Luck Fale and Togi Makabe to follow that. So in the context of the entire show, this match didn't look good. If they had switched the matches around and Fale and Makabe had gone out first, I think people would have liked the match much better, I think.
They did okay.
In the context, it's there were issues in the context of the show.
I didn't think this was a very good match, to be honest with you. No. I don't care where you put it. This they really messed up the finish too. But Makabe, he came up short, you know, with, you know, what they wanted to do here. I thought they kind of messed up the finish a little bit, but I don't really like Makabe that much. But he has a good story, which is different than usual, because he has that connection with Honma, much like Goto with Shibata, that hasn't really been touched on. But Makabe has that story with Honma if they want to go there with him. But, you know, here he just kind of dropped it with Fale. Yeah. This wasn't set up to be anything that was really good. These two don't really have much chemistry at all. And it just wasn't a good match. I don't care where you put it.
You know, it's usually the same with Bad Luck Fale in his G1 Climax runs. They always get the quote-unquote bad matches out of the way very early on.
Yeah, hey, Fale's got to have some good matches later on, but just not this one. That's all. I like Fale. I've always defended Fale, but not this match.
When I did my pickems on my German podcast, Straight Wrestling, I compared Bad Luck Fale to the German national team, because the national team has a reputation about being a tournament team. That usually only really prevails in tournament situations and isn't really a team that is very good in the qualifiers or even friendly games. So I compared Bad Luck Fale to Germany because Fale always prevails in these tournament situations too. So we will see some good matches.
He's going to have a good tournament. Yeah.
Next up was a match that I think you can call it a heavyweight sprint, because Hiroki Goto and Tomohiro Ishii, they went right at it from the get-go and never stopped until the finish. I guess that's what you can summarize from that match.
I think Goto would be like the German football team in terms of kayfabe, because that's his deal. He is the tournament specialist in a lot of ways.
But he never wins.
He never wins, but he wins a lot more in these tournaments than everyone every other time in the year. I think, you know, this match was a great match, by the way. This won't surprise anyone. The problem is we've seen this kind of match between these two before, against each other and against others.
Yes.
So I can see why you may not be in love with this. This wasn't, if this was like the first time they ever had this match, this would be like a match of the year. and what, you know, I'd be raving about it as one of the greatest matches. But as it is, they did a great job. This really was a great match. And they really did try hard. They, like you said, they went all 15 minutes. And it was a sprint, but they got a really good amount of time, almost 16 minutes. And they fought as hard as they could here. Like you said, from zero to the very last second, they gave their all here. And I really loved this match. I thought it was the second best match of the night. And something that I don't know if it'll be given its due, just because they've had these so many great matches before of this style, in fact. But I loved it a lot, you know. I think Ishii is not going to have a good tournament when it comes to points. I love Ishii, but I had him really low, to be honest, in my pickups. I have Goto alive on the last day. I think it's obvious that four men will be alive on the last day in Block A. But I don't have him winning. Unfortunately, though, I would be very happy if that happened.
Yeah,
I think Ishii's in trouble, though, unfortunately. But he'll have so many great matches.
Ishii's a 6 to 8 points guy, I think.
I had him at 4.
Oh.
Like, I went really low on him, but I could see him getting a little more going forward. I think 4 is probably a little low. I just, when I go through the tournament, there's just, Block A especially, it's like, it's really hard to give these guys points going forward. But we'll see what happens.
One spot or two spots I particularly like from this match is I always like when Hiroki Goto does his ducking lariat spot.
Oh yeah.
And Tomohiro Ishii went right with him, so they were taking turns in ducking each other's lariats, which looked pretty cool. And in the end, of course, that's what I always love about Hiroki Goto matches, when he goes to his fatality sequence, hits the reverse GTR, which isn't enough, and then is really fired up about hitting his GTR, and then in the end hit that. And Tomohiro Ishii especially is a guy who makes everything look so great, and the GTR itself isn't a very spectacular move, but Ishii, he sold it so well.
Yeah, I love the GTR as a move. I think it goes perfectly with Goto's moveset.
Yeah.
I think it looks devastating. I think it's a great finisher, actually. I think it's a lot better than the Shoten Kai.
Yeah, the Shoten Kai is a difficult move to do with bigger guys.
Yeah, that too as well. And I just think it looks better overall, because it's just more impactful, in my opinion, than a suplex slam. But I have to say, two things that impressed me about... the thing that both these guys do that impressed me so much is that when it comes to selling, they have this way of doing their tough guy act, but also making sure that the pain is evident throughout this match. And they kept that in mind and gradually escalated as far as the match went. And they had some really great exchanges just when it comes to their big strike exchanges. These two guys, I think, go longer than any two men when it comes to the forearm strike battles, when it comes to aggression, as well as length and time they give. So that's always my favorite spot with these two, because they do it better than anybody, the back-and-forth forearm strike battle.
Yes. They did that here in this match, too. Next up was a very different match from that what we saw earlier in this match, as Zack Sabre Jr., had his G1 debut, and he defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi in 17 minutes with the Jim Breaks armbar, or at least a version of the Jim Breaks armbar. And they, of course, placed this match brilliantly at the beginning of the G1 climax, still playing off the fact that Hiroshi Tanahashi has this partly torn biceps. But Zack Sabre went in a completely different direction than people, I think, thought, because he started to take out Tanahashi's other arm. So basically trying to take away both arms from Tanahashi, which was, I thought, a great storyline.
Yep, he managed to go after the hurt arm. He was really pickpocketing Tanahashi here, going after the limb work. Now, the work in this match was quite good. I have one problem with this match, though.
Yeah.
And that was... We saw someone. We already see interference with Suzuki-Gun matches in this tournament, and that to me, that I can't. I feel like if I praise these matches, then it's almost like saying it's okay. So I cannot say nice things about this match just out of principle. But I will say nice things going against my own principles, because they worked hard and it was good. But I'm not as high on any of this as a lot of people are. And I like Zack Sabre Jr. I think he's been one of the three best workers in the world this year when it comes to purely in-ring, if you look at his entire catalog of matches this year. But New Japan has not been where those matches have been, and I think this is a big part of it. I'm not looking forward to this. I'm definitely not looking forward to Suzuki tomorrow. And this just... It's not like the interference was crazy bad in this match, but it was enough that it took me out of it, you know. So that's all I have to say about that. It was a good match, but I can't really... No props given for that right now.
Of course, what in the end remains is that Zack Sabre Jr. beat Hiroshi Tanahashi, made him tap out, which is very, very rare. And sadly, New Japan didn't go all the way with it. They thought they had to protect Tanahashi in some way, which kind of, as you mentioned, as you just said, kind of hurt Zack Sabre Jr. a little bit in winning, which I think...
How do you think ZSA's tournament is going to go? Where did you have him in terms of points?
Wait a sec. I have him at... I think I have him at 10 points.
I had a feeling you were going to say something like that. And I think he's someone that a lot of people will end up overrating, much like Sonata last year in the tournament. And we saw it last year with Sonata beating Tanahashi. I don't think happy times are ahead for ZSJ in this tournament. I think he's going to... I had him at 6 points overall. And that's not me trying to bury Zach. It's just...
That would mean that from that, now on, he's only again, winning two matches.
Yes. I believe Sonata either had 6 or 8 last year as well. And I think 10 is very overambitious for his standing in New Japan at this point. I don't see him getting many more wins in this tournament overall. I forget who I picked him over, but I think he's going to be someone that disappoints some people when it comes to the pickings. And I think Tanahashi, despite this loss, will be much like Goto. It's obvious that he's going to be alive and then for the last day. I'd be very surprised if any other scenario happened, considering who his last opponent is. And so I really have no worries about him. Zach, I think, is more about, much like Sonata last year, I said the same thing. I think a lot of people may not like me saying that, but if that happens, that doesn't really matter in the long run. What matters is his match quality and the impression he leaves overall, not necessarily him winning lots of matches.
Yeah, but
because his standing will be the same no matter what.
Yeah, but 10 points isn't necessarily a good tournament. That means that he wins half his matches.
Yeah, But who's he going to beat, though, for those four more wins?
For example, Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah, I think I had him beat.
Yuji Nagata. For example, let me just look at it. Who I have him defeating? Goto, for example, in the rematch.
That's not going to happen. That would make no sense because they went out of their way earlier in the year. Yeah. Or maybe I actually had him beating Goto. That just wouldn't make sense. I don't think he's going to beat Makabe. And I still think this size, we've yet to really see what they think about his size difference, only that they have people interfere in all his matches because he can't go on his own. And I think that's really how they see him, with the size. I don't think he's going to get a lot of wins.
That's going to be a problem going forward in the tournament if they, in every match, have El Desperado trying to interfere. That's not going to work out. But that's kind
I just
of,
don't see him beating these heavyweights. Yeah, like Makabe and stuff. Someone that
but everybody will hate me saying. They don't see him as a junior heavyweight, so I think they are going to portray him as being somewhat equal. While he may not win every match, he will, I think, be somewhat equal through his through his technical work.
Yeah, it's possible. We saw Kyle O'Reilly try to jump up last year when it comes to the heavyweights. Did not have much success before he left. It's the look. It doesn't matter that he's in the heavyweight division. Even when Prince Devitt was in the, you know, even when he was getting a big, big push, he didn't have a ton of wins. And I don't foresee Zach being any sort of contender, by the end of this. And that's not me trying to knock Zach. Like I said, it's more how I think they see him. And they've yet to really let him go all out. We've yet to see the full Zack Sabre Jr. experience in New Japan, I feel like. And this was a good step in the right direction. With Tanahashi, who's an amazing worker, but I don't see much for him in this tournament. I don't see his place. I said this when he went to the heavyweights in general. Like, I don't understand the purpose of him being a heavyweight when he could be the, 11th or 12th best, you know, ranked heavyweight in the division. And I think that's really where he's at right now. I don't see any reason to think he's any sort of threat.
I don't have him alive at the final day, nothing like that, but I think he's somewhere in there.
We'll see. I think double digits is pushing. I think double digits and beyond is a healthy tournament.
Okay.
And I don't think we're going to see. We'll see where the heck goes.
Double digits isn't a stretch for the two guys that headlined the show as Tetsuya Naito defeated Kota Ibushi in almost 25 minutes with perhaps the most spectacular version of the Destino yet, because Kota Ibushi has no regards for his body and just took it right on the neck. Of course, this match had so many incredible high spots, which included a second rope pile driver from Kota Ibushi on Tetsuya Naito, and of course his patented swan dive German suplex he debuted against Shinsuke Nakamura in the Tokyo Dome a couple of years ago. There was again a very different match than those that we saw earlier on this night, mainly because it had so many incredible high spots. But you know, Dylan, it wasn't necessarily the high spots that really got me into the match. It were small, minor details. For example, when Kota Ibushi came to the ring, and the ring announcer announced his name, the people were cheering. There was a shot of him where he just soaked in the entire energy of the crowd. And that drove him. And you could see when he went for his golden triangle moonsault later on in the match, he again had this look on his face where he was just enjoying this main event spot and was just enjoying the energy of the crowd. Which later in the match also transitioned to him doing these kicks in the ropes to Tetsuya Naito's chest. He was just relentless about these kicks, and I think Retsu's Uno was the referee in the main event?
Yes, correct? I believe he was.
He was. And he was trying to get Kota Ibushi away from kicking Tetsuya Naito in the ropes, but Kota Ibushi just wouldn't let go. And then there was a shot of Tetsuya Naito on the ground after he ate, like, I don't know, 10... 12 of those kicks, and Naito, he had his eyes wide open, and he sold it so freaking great. And that's always one of the best things about Tetsuya Naito matches, how he sells his opponent's offense. And that's funny, because when Tetsuya Naito won the G1 Climax in 2013, the main criticism that a lot of people had about Naito was that his selling is bad, which wasn't the case back then, and which wasn't the case in this match. So overall, a fantastic performance from both guys here.
Yeah, I think Naito had a tremendous performance here. I really have to give Naito all sorts of props. Like you said, specifically his selling ability here, I thought he came across like, and I used this word in his match with Tanahashi at June, and I think Tanahashi had a truly genius performance. And Naito, this was a genius performance on his part. I really enjoyed what he brought to the table. It was great seeing Ibushi back in these main events. You know, I think you could make a case, because that pile driver was just so crazy.
Yeah.
That such an awesome move. This really should have been the finish, or a finish when he brought it out,
yeah,
because it was just so good. Really waste of a spot. And that's really my only negative towards this. I think you could definitely make the case it was a little too much. But what a spectacular match overall. You have to give it up. This was what the show needed to put it over the top. This was the match of the year candidate that the show needed to put the show over the top, put Ibushi over the top in his return match to New Japan as Ibushi. And Naito continues his tremendous year that he's having. I thought his performance was out of this world. Tremendous match, match of the night for sure. And I know I mentioned with Goto and Tanahashi both being alive on the last day, I think both of these men will be alive on the last day. They set it up perfectly for it to happen, and I think it will happen exactly as such. And I think, yes, both of these guys are going to have really great tournaments, both in terms of wins as well as in-ring performance. So I'm very much looking forward to what these two bring to the table going forward.
Right, and I'm just looking at my predictions, and I think that I have both men... Yes, I have both men alive at the final day of the Block A group stage, yes. So,
yep,
this show really set the tone for the G1 Climax, for the next shows here for the G1 Climax. And I wanted to ask you, I saw an article on the New Japan homepage where they had the trio of Yoshitatsu, Yushin Thunder Liger, and Cheeseburger picking their winners of each block. Liger went with Bad Luck Fale and Sanada. Yoshitatsu went with Hiroki Goto and Sanada. And Cheeseburger went with Tetsuya Naito and Kenny Omega.
I see. A Liger, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what Liger and Yoshitatsu are thinking. But I don't foresee that. I guess Sanada has a lot of fans in the locker room. I will say that. But yeah, that's great. That's great that they made those predictions. I had Naito and Minoru Suzuki, in fact, as my final, what I predicted, and it breaks my heart to say such a thing. But when you look at it logically, the odds of Okada or Omega really don't make sense, unless there's some massive curveball plan that we can't imagine right now, which happened last year, in fairness. But I don't think that makes sense to face Naito. If Naito's moving on, that would really make no sense at all for Okada to win, or Omega, in fact. Elgin was my first gut feeling, but when I thought about it, there's so much with his contract and outside the ring that drove me away from that. I don't think it's going to happen, and especially with how they book him, they have not made him into any sort of big threat. He just got through losing, you know, to Cody in June, and was injured before that and lost to Omega on the Long Beach shows. I don't think he's really been positioned well if there is some sort of big run for him coming. I think Suzuki, as much as I absolutely loathe his matches this year, I hate all of his matches that he's had outside the first Okada matches. Even against my favorite wrestlers, neither of his matches with Goto or Yoshihashi were any good whatsoever. And I think we're going to see some more garbage wrestling in this tournament. But I do think, despite all of that fact, he is the NEVER champion, so he's automatically going to be protected to a very certain extent. And I definitely think that he is going to be a contender. And it actually makes sense for him to finally overcome Yano on the last day. Or Yano just eliminating him, which would be very funny. But the fact that he's the champion, I think they're going to shy away from that this year. And if he beats Yano, then he's probably going to win the block.
Yeah.
So that's my reasoning for that. And Naito is just too obvious. You know, it's going to be Naito. in all likelihood. Like I said, unless there is a really big curveball.
So, I know that there are these contract things with Michael Elgin, but in my pick-ems I still went with him in the finals. Mainly because I couldn't really imagine Evil making it to the finals, but now, as I'm looking at this, a Tetsuya Naito versus Evil final would be fantastic, in my opinion, and would elevate... would be elevating Evil.
He would be my pick if I were running. If this was Dylan's New Japan, and they said, "Who would you pick to face Naito?" I would pick Evil to win. But that would be great. I'd love to see that if it happened. Evil or Sonata really would both be intriguing in their own way. I will say this: Evil has gotten more of a push than Sonata this year. If you look at their matches, if you look at Evil when they come out to the tag match, it's often to Evil's theme music, and Evil is booked stronger overall. But I think that. When it comes down to the Ingobra novelties, either one would make a great match, either one would make a great story, but I don't think they've been pushed ready. And Elgin, it's not just the contract, it's that he's not on that level. Like, he hasn't been pushed to that level at all. No hint.
It's going to be very interesting to see how he starts in this tournament.
I like him. I let me tell you something, Striga. If you go back and listen to our shows last year for the G1,
about if we like or don't like the guy.
Exactly. I thought Elgin was the best performer overall in terms of pure work rate of last year's G1. Although Tanahashi said it was Goto, I said it was Elgin. So I give him all the props in the world. I just think their booking doesn't tell that story properly thus far, unless he has a big run going on early.
Big part of the reason why Michael Elgin made it to the finals in my scenario is because Okada and Omega spoil the finals for each other in whatever way that turns out to be in the end. I made it a time limit draw in my pick-ems.
Oh, wow, that would be interesting. Another draw?
I don't know if you saw the interview that Kenny Omega did that was uploaded to New Japan World last week.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that this match being on the final day of the group stage almost prevents them going to a time limit draw because they will be so wasted by that point in time. And that's, I think it's going to be a very interesting psychological game with those two. They will try to win this very early, but I still felt that they might go there.
I think Omega will spoil it for Okada and get his first win to set up a proper rematch, because if they have another draw, it's just like, how many times are we going to keep doing this?
Yeah, well.
Like, because then if Omega wins again, then there'd be another match. There'd be just no input. And I think Omega, I don't know how long, you know, he wants this feud with Okada to go, you know, but we'll see. I think that's definitely a plausible scenario. I would not be saying, I never saw it coming if they do that. And it would really honestly kind of make sense, considering their past two matches, so I would have no problem at all with that. But I think this is, they're building up to Omega. I think that's more of a clever way of doing things, but I think the more straightforward way is that Omega gets the win to tie the series. And I think that, and they would spoil Okada for whoever the eventual winner is.
Yeah. That's also...
I like your way better.
Very likely scenario that you mapped out here, but still, as you can hear, there are so many, many possibilities in this tournament, and it's always very fun to
follow your heart.
Follow your heart, and also to see how it really turns out in the end. And it usually all ties together over the course of the tournament. And yeah, that's the G1 climax that's going on for the next 3 weeks, and it's almost always an amazing time in the summer to follow the tournament, but also an amazing time was had by the two of us yesterday when we watched Big Japan's Ryo Goku Tansho from Sumo Hall, drawing a little bit over 3,000 fans, which for this card, it doesn't sound that much, because it's like half of what DDT draws in Sumo Hall and one third of what New Japan does in Sumo Hall. But considering the position that Big Japan Pro Wrestling is in Japanese wrestling, and considering the card, we talked about that they put on, I think 3,179 fans was a good turnout for them.
If you listen to the show last week, I mentioned, when you look at the fan vote, this was a show for the fans,
right,
of BJW, ultimately. This wasn't a show about drawing as many people as possible and have the best drawing card possible. This was for the fans of Big Japan Wrestling. And I think we saw that reflected in the attendance here.
Yeah, and as this was a show for the fans of Big Japan Pro Wrestling, I gotta say, I absolutely love this show. From top to bottom, I loved every single match, and every single match of this show was so different from one another. And I said it on Twitter yesterday, the addition of the Big Japan Junior Heavyweight title makes the promotion even more diverse than it already was.
I
was just going to say, the diversity of the promotion was on full display in the Big Japan Tag Team title match, where Abdullah Kobayashi and Ryuji Ito faced Daisuke Sekimoto and Juju Kobayashi.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if you look at pure match quality, the G1 show is better.
Yeah.
But this show appealed to me more as a fan. It really had an underdog type atmosphere to it. Like, the whole show in itself really felt like a do-it-yourself type of promotion. And you look at some of their matches, and we saw literally do-it-yourself action when it comes to the ring, especially going forward. But, you know, there were so many matches. Like you said, I think that's what a part of what made this show so great, is that there was such a variety of it. You know, if you don't like death matches, you had a great technical match, or the junior matches. You know, if you want storyline controversy, you had the strong heavyweight title match. If you want something that was totally unique and really blended two different styles of wrestling entirely together, you had the tag team match.
Right.
So I thought this was a bang-em-up show. And, you know, I really, like you said, every match had its moments. You had the shooters. They had a match with Funaki in there and his yellow tights that he had. You know, so it was just a lot of fun on the show, really, you think about it. A crazy death match with Yankee Nitro Kenju. In there with Tsukamoto and Tsukuda.
That actually, you know, as you mentioned this match, this is one of those death matches that I think you can basically show to most people, because yes, at points it was crazy, but it still was a great wrestling match, because Yankee Nitro Kenju, they do this style for so many years now, and on the other side we had Tsukamoto and Tsukuda also working together very, very well, and with the crazy stipulation they had with the wheat whacker.
Yeah,
going back to CCW's wife beater, and and also this table that didn't break in the end when Miyamoto did the moonsault off the top of the cage.
Oh my god.
Was some incredibly crazy spots, but still as a whole I thought it was a very good match, and not as crazy as it could have been.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty crazy, but yeah. This was still a good match, though. Like you said, I totally agree with all of your points you made here. Yankee Nichi Kenju, obviously we know, are great wrestlers, and Tsukamoto, you know, is a really good wrestler, too. I've always enjoyed him, thought he was underrated. Tsukuda doing good things in this match, but, you know, I think that when you look at these matches, like you said, I just think it was a good match overall, with crazy stuff thrown in there, but not to the detriment of the match. The cage spots were really wild. The table bump is just like, how is that even possible? That defied the laws of physics.
I have no idea. Know?
That defied the laws of physics right there, you know? So I got to give it props for that right there. It was just a really cool match. I thought I totally agree with you on that one.
Yeah, another level of craziness was the concrete block all over death match.
Oh, this was way worse.
And to the point of the do-it-yourself style of Big Japan Pro Wrestling,
Yes.
They laid out the entire ring with concrete blocks, and Katsumi Kikuta, who earlier on this show had the tag match with Masakatsu Funaki against Yoshihisa Uto and Takuya Nomura, was the star of the build-up in this scenario, because he was so fired up on planting the entire ring with concrete blocks. And we learned afterwards that Big Japan sold each cinder block for 500 yen.
That's awesome. I love that. Brenda promoting right there.
Yeah,
that was brilliant.
But the match, it was crazy.
Man, this every bump that these guys took, like, to me, especially when you had... was it Numazawa that took the leap off the top rope with the splash and missed the splash?
I think so.
I think it was Numazawa. But Numazawa, he did the splash, missed, because Minoru Fujita moved. And this bump to me, this was like worse than a spot, I know you hate it in New Japan, when Takahashi does the sunset bomb over the ropes.
Yeah, much worse.
This to me was like a million times worse.
Yes, no question.
The worst, though, by far, and as dangerous as this match was, I was aching in this match. I was just imagining working this match, and I was like, I needed to see a doctor after this match, but just because I did it through osmosis or something. I feel like I was a part of this match. But the finish to this match, which was, I can only describe as, you describe the finish, because...
The move is called a reverse U-crash, and it's a reverse elevated DDT that Takeda does.
And what did he do before that, though? Where Takeda, he put a cinder block next to Hoshino's head.
Yeah.
And then put a chair on top of that, and fastballed another cinder block into the other cinder block on his head. Now, this spot to me... And I'm not this guy, normally. We've talked about this, about dangerous moves in wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
They almost never bother me, when it comes to stuff. I don't care if it's a headbutt, because a lot of times the bad stuff that happens is a freak accident that we'll see a million times and nothing bad will happen. This, if he had mistimed this throw by a few inches, he could literally have killed Yoshino. This was way too far, in my opinion.
There were some parts on this show where I was really scared about something bad happening, not only in but also in the main event.
the main event as well. That spot in particular, more than anything with blades, nails, or anything like that, that to me was just way too far when it comes to the concrete. The margin for error, like, you look at, if you do a really hard move that could cause concussions or serious injuries, the odds of it doing something catastrophic are very, very small. This, if you did this move, he did this throw 10 times, I'd be very surprised if one of them didn't kill somebody.
Yeah, but the issue with sumo hall is they can't... Big Japan usually uses a lot of light tubes in their death matches, but they can't use them here. And that almost makes them to go much harder than they usually do in these death matches.
Yeah. It's fine. I don't mind them going hard. I don't even mind this cinder block, as painful as it was, because this was crazy in a lot of ways. The U-crash, that hurt a lot. Everything in this match hurt a lot. Even just doing a simple Russian leg sweep hurt a lot. So I can only imagine how these guys felt after that match. That was just too much, the fastball of the cinder block. Just too big of a margin, too small of a margin for error. And that's the only thing I didn't like. But it was a spectacle match for what it was. You will not see anything like this in any other company.
No.
And I also kind of like that, just for purely as a death match, I like that they did this instead of the traditional. I would prefer something like this when it comes to this, because it's more original than the typical light tubes. Because in the old days, remember, they used to have the match with the scorpions and the cactus and the piranhas.
During the break in this show, they showed some of the classic death matches they had.
Yeah, exactly. So I like seeing crazy stuff like that is kind of non-traditional. The light tubes are traditional, and I like crazy stuff like this, and this was definitely just wild. I just didn't like that move at all. That's my only nitpick on this match, but it was a spectacle and an enjoyable watch.
What did you think about the Strong World Heavyweight title match when Hideki Suzuki defeated Ryuichi Kawakami? He really choked him out. He didn't tap, he choked him out.
This match was awesome. I loved this match. I thought, you know, first of all, for the first few minutes of this match, I was focused on Hideki's tights here, because I noticed that he must have changed colors on these things, because they were not purple. They were not purple at all. They were pink.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what this signified. This was a tribute to Atsushi Kotoge, or what? But I think that's the only logical explanation. But I just think that these guys had a great match. Early on, Kawakami tried to mat wrestle Hideki, and Hideki totally schooled him on the mat. And in this match in general, I think Kawakami had some great moments overall, but this was all really about Hideki. Like, they really didn't give Kawakami too much in this match. Hideki even broke out and Hideki Kanrana, which looked amazing and ugly at the same time. But just as it should have, Kawakami got a busted lip, and the finish of this match was Hideki punched him right in the face. Hideki would.
There were so many moments where they just punched each other right in the face and hit each other with elbows. Mm-hmm. Worked so well, I love this match too.
The finish, though, I know that's what you want to talk about, is the finish.
Yeah, so I didn't expect Kawakami to win, really. But apparently some people did and were kind of disappointed with the outcome. And I can see that because he choked out Kawakami, and now where does he go?
Kawakami, here's what I thought. I was excited because everyone was telling me how Kawakami was going to win, and then Hideki won with a choke. So I kind of got super excited when it happened. I was like, yes! The problem, I think even that may have been okay. Then after the match, Hideki took out the trash in this match, pretty much. That was a little over the top. I would say that, I like Kawakami. I love Kawakami, actually. I was really hyped for this match. They delivered to everything I wanted. Kawakami goes nowhere is where this finish it tells me what they think of Kawakami and any sort of main event potential. This was essentially saying, you are not on his level.
Yeah.
You are not a championship caliber competitor at this moment in time. He needs to be rebuilt. My idea was that, and to me, and it also set up the next match for Hideki to defend his title when Daichi got the ring, and they had their little pull apart.
Yeah.
He dropkicked Hideki to no effect.
he punted Hideki in the head, and no, it was to an effect, because when Daichi came in and kicked him in the head, Suzuki was really tumbling inside the ring.
Yeah, that worked, but he hit the drop kick.
Yeah.
Everybody went to the ring to pull him apart. Hideki went back in. So that sets up their match. I didn't like this part. Like you said, as much as I love this match, and I love Hideki winning, I think Hideki is the right man to be champion right now. But to me, Kawakami, I feel for him because he's out of luck, really, on this roster right now. I think that the best thing for him would be to be loaned off to one of these other companies that BJW works with and have a strong run, because there's no room for him right now in Big Japan.
Well,
there's just
no
room.
He's having a strong run in Basara right now.
Yes, Basara, that is true. But more somewhere full-time than Basara, because there's just no room for him here. And I think if Daichi does end up getting this win over Hideki, that makes Kawakami he's dead. he's dead no more, if you do that.
That's a big issue with them, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
I wish that they had done Daichi. That was my original plan for all this, because it would have made more sense for him to go for revenge for Kamikani after his last title defense, rather than, why was he out here with, what's his deal with Kawakami?
Well, he lost his match. And
then
in the end, challenges for the strong title, kind of awkward,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. See, I would prefer them to, not... this was a booking blunder in some ways. It really was, but, hopefully he doesn't drop it to Daichi. No offense to Daichi, but I just think Hideki is this is a fantastic title reign, all in all. I feel bad for Kawakami, because I really like him. I don't really have a problem with him losing, it's just when he threw him out of the ring after the match, that was you're throwing somebody back to OVW, pretty much. You know, like that's what it felt like. So his run on top was not what we could have expected or wanted. But, you know, we never know. We're going to see where they go. I think, and my booking plan on Twitter, I mentioned this, I think that Hideki should continue to hold this title for a long time. And because there's no reason to hold it, for anyone else to hold it, really. What good does Sekimoto do as champion, as great as he is, you know, at this moment? I think he should hold it for a while. I would build up Yoshihisa Uto for a big main event next year to have the final stage, much like we saw with Sekimoto and Okabayashi 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Kamatani as well last year had a bit of a passing the torch moment. And, you know, and like you said, I was with you. It was like, why would they really do the same thing over and over again? But I think they do have a good chance for it next year if they build this up right. But we'll see where they go with Daichi. I don't think it's impossible that Daichi wins at all. I'm not rooting for it, but I don't think it's impossible at all.
And next year could be the moment for Yoshihisa Uto. This year he wasn't ready. Maybe next year he will be.
Yep.
But Dylan, did I read that correctly that you didn't really like the tag title match on the show?
Yes, you did read that right, and there's
What's
a reason
wrong
for
with
that.
You?
What's wrong with me is that so when I watch these Big Japan tag matches, especially for the Strong title, I come in there to see strong BJ style of wrestling, and we got some of that in this match. I think there were moments where they picked this up, and I really started to get into this match. And then suddenly something would happen, and Ito would bring the chair into the ring, and we would see that. No, not exactly, because if I wanted to watch garbage wrestling, we have New Japan for that. Like, well, if you want westernized wrestling, we have New Japan for that. I don't want to see that in Big Japan ever, like, when it comes to these matches.
Might be the wrong promotion for you, because
they are gonna
bring in chairs, and that's where both divisions of Big Japan blend together. And that's exactly why I enjoyed this match.
But make it a death match then. Don't do distractions and bullshit like that I don't ever want to see in my wrestling, because that's just garbage, like, you know, to me. I hate that style of wrestling. Everyone knows I don't like that style of wrestling, and we saw it again.
What I feel in this show is, Dylan, that you may get caught up in details and don't enjoy the overall greatness of something. Is that a problem for you? Do you want to talk about that?
What overall greatness was there in this match? I mean, like, we had some good moments. I'm not saying
performance was the best that I ever saw from him.
Yeah, like, he was good. That when they wrestled, there was good moments. I don't think there's any sort of match of the year candidate at all. Like some people were saying, it just is a pure wrestling match. You know, they had some impressive spots. It was more about the spots than like a flowing match, really. Like,
it was,
you know,
it was about to prove that the Big Japan Deathmatch guys can also wrestle. And for Abdullah Kobayashi, what's his weight right now? I think he's must be about 300 pounds, something like that.
I liked it when he wrestled with Okabayashi.
Pounds, yes. That was incredibly impressive, I thought. Roji Ito, he wasn't as impressive as West Kobayashi was. The match was mainly carried by Kobayashi doing awesome spots, as you mentioned, with Sekimoto and with Okabayashi. And that's exactly what I liked about this match. It was Kobayashi doing spots in the ring with Okabayashi, and while on the outside you heard Roji Ito just going into his playing field, bringing out the chairs. I really liked that part about this match. I can understand why you didn't like it, but to me it was a very good and very fun tag match.
I just don't understand why, if we're going to do that, why not just make it a death match? Like, we could do that and just have it be in the rules. I want the rules to matter. Like, you know, for example, if in Spider-Man, him swinging around on a Spider-Man's, you know, the spider web is, like, silly in real life, but in Spider-Man it works. However, if Spider-Man just suddenly started shooting laser beams out of his eyes and started flying, that's equally ridiculous, but because of the world they've created, it's way stupid. It's way more stupid. And in wrestling, what's the point of the rules if they're going to be broken this way? And I like I said, I watch this company specifically, as well as All Japan, when I watch these promotions, I don't want to see this in my wrestling. We have New Japan for that. We have death matches if you want wrestling, or if you want that kind of stuff, if you want weapons in your wrestling. And I don't understand why this just couldn't have been a death match, really, if that's how they were going to approach it. Kobayashi, I have no problem with him. I really enjoyed him doing the technical wrestling. They had a great moment when, he revealed his strong style trunks that he had on. And, you know, they did some good spots. There were good spots in this match. I'm not going to say this was some awful match. It was a decent match. But I don't think, for me, I didn't enjoy this. But for the fans in the attendance, them winning, regardless of whatever match they had, them winning was enough of a moment to where it was going to get over, and it did get over. It was a great moment right. to see them win, regardless of the match. So I have no problem with them winning or anything like that, or their performance. I didn't like that part of it. And I didn't think the match was any sort of match near kin.
We've had the tag team title within the strong BJ ranks since 2014 yeah. now. Now they are going in a little bit of a different direction, which all makes sense in within the universe of Big Japan, because this tag team title is not a strong tag team title, it's a tag team title of the entire yeah. promotion. And also, Dylan, the entire promotion, it's based on no disqualification rules. There never is a disqualification.
Why was the ref distracted then? When he pulled in
well,
the chair.
That you have on every Japanese promotion that you have no. the ref distracted. when there is this kind of stuff, that always happens.
No.
Yes, it does. No. Yes, it does.
I don't remember in Baba's All Japan any of this happening in Misawa's tag title defenses and the Holy Demon Army's tag title defenses. I may be wrong on this. You may, if someone can find me video of Holy Demon Army.
I never prepared this classic All Japan. I never did.
Well, I know you did. You said every promotion, and that's not true.
I'm talking about wrestling in Japan right now. I'm not talking about 1987.
Was Holy Demon Army in 1987?
No, it wasn't.
Mid-90s. No. You're wrong all over the place right now. What about All Japan right now? What about, you know, like, there's not... I don't remember seeing this in any tag title matches in All Japan. You know, like I said, why can't we just have it be a death match? What would be the problem with that? And just have... Because it, like you said, it would make it seem like the deathmatch guys are still on the same level as the strong style guys.
Yeah, but why wouldn't Ryuji Ito take advantage of the rules that are in effect in Big Japan Pro Wrestling, and that rules are that there is no disqualification in whatever match you have.
Well, why was the referee distracted then? That's my main issue.
Well, that doesn't make sense, but that happens all over the place in every wrestling match in Japan. You know. That's an issue that a lot of people have with Japanese wrestling is that the referees don't have any leverage, and that the referees don't do a disqualification even when a lot of people interfere. That's something that Japanese wrestling has in this day and age.
I don't remember any matches in Big Japan having anything like that when it comes to the strong style tag team titles until this match. I don't remember any matches having something like this happen. When it comes to the strong tag team titles.
Did you just say strong tag team titles?
Not the strong tag team titles, but when it comes to strong BJ's reign as the tag team champions. And when they have strong style matches for the tag team titles.
Yeah, right, but that's my point. You get caught up in this detail and that...
The detail of years of the rules. Like, I don't think that's like a minor thing. If I want to suspend my disbelief, which is what wrestling is at its core, why do I have to, why do I have to put up with stupid stuff that, like, would never happen in reality all the time, when it comes to the rules? Like, I do that enough in the actual match. I don't need to do it with the outside factors of the match. And like I said, if I wanted that style of wrestling, we have other promotions for that. Like, there are so many other promotions. Why do the tag titles in Big Japan need to have that same style that we see over and over and over in New Japan? And it's not really prevalent at all in All Japan. Noah has their moments, but for the most part, don't really do this. And I've never seen this in any strong style match in Big Japan at all. So I don't think your point is very valid.
No, because in the strong division, you don't have deathmatch wrestlers, but in the tag division, you have both. both divisions. And you can.
I'm just asking when this happened in a tag team title match in Big Japan with any wrestlers. It could be Deathmatch or Strong Style.
You just still on this point of the distraction.
Yes, because it sucked.
I don't have an example for that, but I
because it didn't happen. That's why you don't have an example.
It didn't bother me at all. But you, in every promotion in Japan, you have these kind of ref distractions, even though the refs never call for a DQ.
Three times I've said All Japan, and you've had no count of this. Like I said, it's not happened in Big Japan, so I don't care about other promotions.
Yeah, well,
like first of all, but we already had All Japan, like I said, so that's another promotion. But I don't care if they did. Big Japan, to me, I don't watch Big Japan matches, whether it be the title or the tag titles or the junior title or any other title.
You know, we can discuss this like 10 or 15 minutes longer, but I absolutely don't see your point about that. So let's just take it.
It's never happened. That's my point. It's never happened before and shouldn't happen.
Let's just take it to a match that we both enjoyed very much. That was Shinobu and Katsuki Hashimoto. To me, the best match of the show with a fantastic selling of Shinobu, and I really thought that Shinobu, 5 minutes in the match or 6 minutes in the match, I was wondering if Shinobu was selling or if he was legit hurt, because he sold his arm so well. And while you might say that Katsuki Hashimoto should have won this match with all the arm work he did and with all the submissions he did, in the end, I thought it was a great story that Shinobu still came back and threw his lariats and in the end won with his sex bomber lariat. So, fifth match on the card for the Big Japan Junior Heavyweight title, decision match for the newly established title. 13 minutes, Shinobu and Katsuki Hashimoto, go watch that.
Oh man, this is a great match. Definitely in potential for the match of the night. I think you can definitely make the case. I think this was probably my match of the night too, to be honest with you. Even over the strong title match. I really just loved everything about this, really. You know, Keihash, to me, I think I was really expecting him to win, but I have no problem with Shinobu winning. He's been around for a long time, and we saw it basically in this video is hyping up some weird stuff on his part, but also how long he's been in the company. You know, and I thought these guys really just did a great job. The arm work on this. Hashimoto, to me, you made a great point on Twitter. His similarities and growing comparison to Minoru Tanaka in his prime here with Kazuki Hashimoto, and I think that's great. For a long time, it would seem like he was trying to work more like Kanemoto when he was teaming with Kanemoto, in fact, but he's more adopted this technical style as well now that I just think rocks. This is exactly what I wanted in my wrestling. I was very surprised by Shinobu winning, as I mentioned, but like I said, I really have no problem with it whatsoever. I think in hindsight, I think it's great that the inaugural champion for this new title, even though they actually showed footage of the original title in the pre-show match, which I was very happy to see. But they had a really great match. Shinobu really fought his way back from the arm work, and he used those moves. He did a shooting star press as well that set up the finish with the third Axe Bomber that just looked tremendous, and I think both men looked tremendous in this match. It was a great match, and you even had who presented the belt to Shinobu.
Yeah, of course, Tajiri did.
And what about that hair?
Tajiri overall, but his shirt matched his hair, so.
that is true. I hope 50 years from now we see a match where a deathmatch person uses a chair in this match for the first time in 50 years, 20 years, whatever. And we're going to be on this podcast, and I'm going to call back to this moment, to this show with...
You will never remember this moment in 50 years.
Oh, I will. You will. I love this show. Listen, I'll remember this moment. I have a great memory. I remember stuff when I was 2 years old, Striga. I will remember this show. And this was a memorable show. This was a very memorable show, without a doubt,
but
one of my favorites.
Let's just talk about the title. Because...
Yeah, the title's...
I wasn't surprised that Shinobu won the belt, because I think it is a belt that was created for guys like Katsuki Hashimoto, and I think specifically for Katsuki Hashimoto. But with him, I think it's about the chase, that they want him to still grow in his role. While Shinobu, he's an established man. He has been wrestling for Big Japan for like 10 or 12 years now. His first, let me just look that up. His first match for Big Japan Pro Wrestling was in 2006. So 11 years now. And he is a great technical wrestler as well as a high-flying guy. He is exactly the right fit for this title to be established, because the Big Japan Junior Heavyweight title, as we see it right now, is more about the technical stuff, but he also can do the high-flying. And so I believe that Shinobu's first defense of the belt will be against Yuya Aoki, as a matter of fact, because Yuya Aoki defeated Shinobu in the Junior Heavyweight title league. But also, Katsuki Hashimoto has a claim for a rematch because he defeated Shinobu in the league. So
yep.
They set up a lot of things here on this show, and in the end, after the main event that Masaya Takahashi won against Takayuki Ueki, it was announced that Masaya Takahashi would be joining Big Japan Pro Wrestling after Ryota Hama and Yasufumi Nakanoe also joined the roster in July. Masaya Takahashi, from the beginning of August, is now an official Big Japan Pro Wrestling member, as he was with Asuka Pro before that, a little, very tiny promotion. And they, a point that I made on Twitter as well, is that they have assembled a very good roster over the last 1 to 2 years, and it's really great to see how everything comes together here for Big Japan.
Yeah, like I said, this match, I thought the video package was really good too. Beforehand, and like I said last week, this was the capper of a show for the fans that really was the great capper for that archetype of a show, with Ueki getting the main event here, and there was so much violence in this match. I have to say, you know, I wonder how, like, if you were somebody like Trask who was watching both shows, and like we were at the very end, there was so much amazing wrestling. I wonder what you felt watching this match at the end of it, because there was blood, there was tacks, there was barbed wire. There was a chain, a base, and a gun. Well, there's always a gun in Ueki's match. The spiked nail board, because my God, that's always a staple in Takahashi matches for the title. But it was just a really far violent match. It was definitely a hot-blooded way of life, bloody death match. I would say I give it the full award. It was hot-blooded. It was a way of life, and it was bloody. So I mean that you cannot describe it better than that.
They lived up to that.
Yes, they definitely did live up to that.
Yeah, it was a crazy match in the end, and let me just say that Takayuki Ueki almost killed himself like 30 minutes into the match when he almost, I think, broke his neck with a dive.
Oh man,
that was insane.
There's a lot of risk being taken in this match. It wasn't for the faint of heart, I will say that, but, you know, it was what it was. I wonder what he was thinking when he did that dive, and he came back up from that, you know? It's like, does your life flash before your eyes, or are you just like, oh, screw it?
One of the moments where I was wondering what they were doing was when Ueki brought in this welder thing.
Oh yeah, that too.
Glass. It wasn't glasses. It was an entire frame. That was something.
Oh man, there was salt in the match.
Yes,
yeah. So, yeah, it was just a lot of dangerous moments in this match. I'd say, but it is what you expect, and you knew that this was going to happen. It's the main event of the biggest show of the year. The fans voted these guys into the main event. I really got to give it up to them for trying so hard in this match. I actually didn't see it at first. I was able to acquire a secret recording of this match to watch it later on. And I was very surprised, not by the violence, but just by I don't want to say surprised, maybe isn't the right word, but I don't know. it's one of those matches that leaves you kind of confused after you watch it, you know, Striga, I feel like. But I thought it was good for what it was. If you like death matches, I think you're going to like this. Yeah, you know, there was definitely a lot of punishment taken and a lot of heart shown by both men.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
And there was a lot of weapons that were doing. So they got creative with the weapons, too. Remember that mace thing that they brought in? I that was my favorite. The chain thingy that they brought in. The thingy, as I call it now.
Yes, the thingy.
Yes, the thingy.
Sounds kind of cute in this dangerous environment.
I'm trying to add some, I'm trying to lighten the mood a little bit here in this bloody death match that we had.
Yeah, well, let's go from here to another company that will enlighten the mood of everybody, because All Japan Pro Wrestling is again on a strong run. They also ran on this C-Day, on this national holiday, on the 17th. They ran Kirkland Hall, sold out the place with 1,595 fans, headlined by Shuji Ishikawa against Zuwama, as well as Kento Miyahara against Joe Doering. Very easy scenario here. Miyahara won his match. Shuji Ishikawa won his match. They are going to face in Sumo Hall on August 27. That was announced earlier today, with a couple of more title matches that were announced. But except for that, we have for the big Sumo Hall card, we have Taichi versus Yuma Aoyagi. We have a All Japan Pro Wrestling 45th Anniversary Memorial Tag Match, Dory Funk Jr. and Hiro Saito versus Masanobu Fuchi and the Great Kabuki. And then we have Caristico versus El Diamante. So as the Lucha Talk correspondent, what can you say about this match?
Caristico has had a really nice year in Mexico. Diamante, he's been a little off the radar, but he was in Elite last year, and he had some good performances. He's around a long time ago, a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, in the In Busca de un Idolo tournament. And he kind of struggled a little bit, but he kind of reappeared last year in Elite and looked a lot better. So hopefully they have some good stuff on the horizon for the All Japan fans and represent Lucha well. Caristico returning to Japan after his spectacular post-match celebration in the Super J Cup last year after the six-man tag,
and
where he stayed in the ring. Yes, he was. I was also going to bring it up as well. The Fukumin League in Michinoku Pro, which he won, and he did a pretty good job in there. So I'm sure it'll be a pretty nifty match.
To me, that came totally out of the blue.
They made sure to announce on CML, on Informa. They were like, well, we know CML guys can only really wrestle New Japan, but remember, Caristico is a freelancer.
Okay.
So they wanted to make sure to add that in.
All right. But the real story of yesterday's Kurikan Hall show, and the real story about this Sumo Hall show for All Japan Pro Wrestling, is going to be the singles match between Zuwama and the returning Satoshi Kojima. For those who are not aware of what allegedly happened, when Satoshi Kojima left All Japan Pro Wrestling, that was in 2010, he lost the Triple Crown to Ryota Hama. At that point, Ryota Hama was nowhere near the level of a wrestler that he is right now. I think he was wrestling for 2 years? 1 year? I don't know. And Ryota Hama beat Kojima for the belt in early 2010. Kojima then left All Japan. There was something around his arm injury that Kojima... And All Japan didn't want to re-sign Kojima. But the behind the curtain, allegedly, the storyline was that, or the problem was that Kojima didn't want to drop the fall to Zuwama, which led to a lot of bad blood. You can also, Chase, who formerly ran the All Japan Purezo fan site, he typed that up because he was really well informed back in those days about All Japan Pro Wrestling. It still has some context, I believe. It's at Chase Kills on Twitter. He put that together yesterday. Very interesting insight. So this is going to be a very interesting match, Dylan.
Yes, it is, and that story is completely correct by Chase there. So really good job there, everybody. Follow him on Twitter. You know, it's again, like you said, it's going to be a big match for numerous reasons, and it's hard to think of why this match is happening. Only other than there's a lot of reasons why it's happening, but I think the end result is ultimately going to be Suwama ending up getting his win here that he couldn't get those years ago for the Triple Crown. And it's just great to see these two companies working together, you know, really, as I think about it. But as you said, with the backstory of this match in particular, and Kojima coming back, even if it was just a regular match for Kojima, just having him back means a lot. He meant so much to this company in the early to mid-2000s that him being back is awesome, and him facing Suwama just adds another layer to it. So I really have no thoughts in terms of what allegedly happened back then, but we're just going to see how it plays out now, and I think Suwama will end up getting his win here. I don't think I'd be very surprised if the opposite happened.
Yeah, me too. I would be very surprised if Kojima got the win here. But from what I heard earlier in the year already, that it's kind of that the third generation is going to come in after the G1 Climax into All Japan Pro Wrestling. So I don't know if we will necessarily see everyone from there, but we will possibly see a mixture of Kojima, Tenzan, Nagata, Nakanishi in All Japan Pro Wrestling, which will give them something to do while New Japan Pro Wrestling is so filled up with lots of guys. And also someone coming in is Yoshitatsu for the Royal Road Tournament in September. He's facing Tajiri in the first round. What do you think about Tatsu getting his shot here?
Now look, I just want to say that I've kind of started to feel bad for Yoshitatsu. Yeah. Because he's so hated by everyone. He seems like kind of an okay guy overall. He took some risk when he left New Japan originally, and things haven't really worked out upon his return due to injury somewhat. But let me just put it this way. I don't want to be mean here, but it sends kind of a bad message to me when you're using this. He's basically the last ranked guy on the New Japan roster.
He is, yeah.
And he's here in your tournament, kind of. It's like the worst guy in your company can be in our heavyweight title tournament. I don't like them. But it's nothing against Yoshitatsu, it's just about the rankings, but more or less. I'd prefer them to do something.
Kind of imagined the negotiations between Akiyama and New Japan, and he said, well, that's just from the top of my head, not what really happened, I think. Well, we want Kojima, and New Japan says, well, if you want Kojima, you have to take Yoshitatsu too.
Okay, but I wish they had Kojima in the tournament.
Yeah.
I don't mind Yoshitatsu, I don't even mind Taichi. Like, I mean, we talked about it earlier in the year, how much I dislike Taichi, and you like him a lot. But I think that match actually has its place on the card. You know, I don't mind that at all. I wouldn't mind Yoshitatsu even getting a singles match on the card, or even a lower tier title shot, even a TV title shot. But it's just, the heavyweight title, the Triple Crown, should be protected, that only the finest competitors should be able to go for it. And that, or at least that would be the image I would try to cultivate. Because now it just seems like any, jobber can come after it, lack of a better term.
But it isn't a heavyweight tournament, you know. It's basically, it's an open tournament. They don't specifically say that the winner gets a Triple Crown shot, do they?
Hasn't that happened every time they've run the tournament?
Yes, because every time they ran the tournament, a heavyweight won in the end. But there are also junior heavyweights in this tournament.
And there are junior heavyweights in the Champions Carnival. We've seen Aoki in there in the past. So, like, I mean, it's still where the winner's getting a title shot.
In the end,
like,
yes. But in recent years, they specifically marketed this as a open weight tournament.
All right, I can feel you on that one. I guess that makes it a little better. But I just think everyone expects there to be a title shot. In reality, no matter who wins this, and I just think it sends the wrong message. But that makes it a little better. I guess I could kind of feel you on that one. I actually can kind of feel where you're coming from. If it was an open weight tournament, that's fine. But what, even then, though, what would it say if Yoshitatsu wins all of his matches? You know,
yeah, and it wouldn't be a good message.
Yeah. So either way, it's still not a good thing. You know.
Yeah.
But it's just the wrong message.
About the point you made, he broke his neck a couple of years ago, and he never was the same afterwards. It's not really his fault.
I always defend him. He was one of the best young lions. Like, nobody knows back then, but he was one of the most popular young lions. Like, even more than the guys that everybody loves now. He was very popular when it comes to the fans. He even got a U-30 title shot against Tanahashi. He was the last one against Tanahashi. He was good. Like, he was actually legitimately good. But like you said, the injury had a lot to do with it. It just hasn't came together this year. But, you know, and, like I said, I don't mean to be mean to the guy. It's just purely about the rankings in New Japan. You know, that's all. If he had, like, a singles match, I would have no problem with that. Even if he had a title shot, like I said, I would have no problem whatsoever with him being in All Japan. It's just the tournament aspect of it that kind of, like, you know, I can't get behind it.
Okay, so
they're doing something right, though. They sold out Korakuen. You know, so I, you know, it, when you sell out Korakuen, you know, you got to give it up. So I give props to All Japan, even if this isn't what I agree with necessarily, and I don't agree with a lot of things they're doing, actually, when you look at their booking of late, but I still really enjoy this company a lot, so I'll always say positive things about what All Japan is doing right now.
So after the two of us had a discussion about some general things in wrestling, we got an email, Dylan, and this also goes into another direction of something for general observation one of our listeners made. The email address is actually DC All American. I don't think that he is Daniel Cormier, but I will not question him for this. He says, "This is DC. What is the kayfabe reason why wrestlers yell out other wrestlers' names before an attack? I never understood this. Wouldn't you want your opponent's attention not completely on you before you hit them? Explain that for me."
First of all, sup DC, thanks for sending in the question. I really appreciate that on your part. I always appreciate all the questions we get, no matter what they are. And for your information, this is a well-known trait in wrestling. I'm going to, you know, break the fourth wall a little bit here. So I'm going to give you some secret info from wrestling. When you yell out someone's name, the sound waves of coming from your mouth go into your mind and activate secret chakras hidden in your mind and in your body to unleash your full potential and your full power for a striking attack. And that is why they yell out their name. And when you focus to a specific point, such as someone's name, it will double that power that you have. So that is why the wrestlers do it right there. Any wrestler would tell you.
Okay. I don't have any better explanation. So
any wrestler,
we will just go with that.
Any wrestler.
And also, that's all Dylan, I'm saying. Also, Dylan.
Yeah.
This is not an email that I typed, so I'm just going to read this, okay?
Oh my god, now what?
Quote, "Also, Dylan, I think it is an insult if a girl gives you a handshake at the end of a date."
It was a high five, actually.
Yes, it was a high five.
Three high fives in a row, for the record. And also, I just want to mention that we had planned to go on another date afterwards, but things got kind of busy. So, but we will go on another date again, so all hope is not lost. But I will say three high fives. Not a giant winner, but I'm a... Listen, Strigger, the problem is I'm such a conservative person when it comes to these
things.
I always like to... I never want to give away too much on the first date. I think that's the problem when it comes to me. So maybe it was an insult, but it seemed to go well enough. We're still talking, and another date could be lined up any day now in the future. It just depends on one of us not being busier than the other, pretty much. So I will say, you know, I can see where it comes from. I can see why you would think that, but that's only to the untrained eye that would think it was an insult. I think if you know deep down me and my conservative nature, my values, and have my moral values when it comes to dating and women in general, you will know that I would never go too far for any reason early on, no matter who it was. And I think a high five was exactly a perfect way to end any first date, in my
opinion. No, that's definitely much better than if the girl gave you the dead fish handshake. And high five works.
Ooh, the dead fish handshake. Yeah, that's that would be an issue, because then it might mean she's a wrestler. Because I've given out that handshake many times. I will say that. So if she's a wrestler, that could be problems right there. So, but no offense to any wrestling women listening. I've actually talked to many women who are wrestlers that are very kind, that I've kind of had a thing for myself. So it's no problem there. I don't mean any disrespect whatsoever. I'm just saying the dead fish handshake, not on the end of a date. The date is not the point. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, well, that was the show for today. If you want to get into interaction with us directly, you can do that on Twitter. I am Striga at Striga. He is Dylan. He's at Dylan0Sky. And if you want to email us, the email address is japan@mlw.com. I enjoyed this show very much, Dylan. There was some controversy on the show. I enjoy that we are not always of the same opinion. That's great here. And I will give you the floor for your final words here.
You know, this is a controversial show. I'm a controversial person. We've seen it in the past. And it's not everyone's going to love me, and not everyone's going to love what you have to say either, Striga.
That's true.
You know, it's just...
I don't have an issue with that. So.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's no issues whatsoever. It's all good at the end, you know. These things, wrestling's about... Part of the fun is talking about it with the people you like and enjoy spending time with, and having different opinions doesn't change that or take the fun out of it for me. I think it's a great thing, and I hope everybody enjoyed the show listening to it, whether you agree with me, whether you agree with Striga. I'm totally cool with that.
Or whether you have a third opinion, and you can voice that opinion as well.
Yeah, like if you have a third opinion, I'd be really interested to hear what you came up with, how that became a thing. But please message me on Twitter, whether it be DMs, whether you want to slide into the DMs, whether you want to message me in public. I will totally talk to you about any subject in the world of wrestling or anything else. You could talk to me about if the controversy surrounding the high fives at the end of the date, is that a good or bad thing?
I don't think it really is a controversy.
It's a controversy. No, I totally agree. You're right. My explanation settled any sort of negative or misguided feelings towards that. But you can still talk to me and give me your take on it on Twitter, and I will definitely listen to any advice any of you have for me.
All right. So, thank you for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.